and welcome to Academy of Blues, a Chelsea FC podcast brought to you from sunny and smoky Southern California. Well, it has been quite the week for us Chelsea fans. We've had ups, we've had downs, and we've had our West Broms. Quite frankly, there's too much for me to discuss on my own. Luckily for us, joining me is someone with an extensive experience discussing all things blue, a man with a blood feud against Jose Mourinho who has never had to leave a game or podcast to use the restroom. It's Matty Gebrekristos. How are you doing, Matty?
That is well played. I am doing fantastically well. Well, I would have been doing better if Tottenham lost today, but it's not even if Chelsea won, it's if Tottenham lost. But hey, that intro, that blood feud with Mourinho, that just put me on a whole nother thing. So I am doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty great. I mean, our podcasts are maybe about like 30 to 50 minutes or so, sometimes an hour. So it's not quite long enough that I'm like rushing to get out of here, you know, and we don't even have like 15 minute breaks in the middle. So the highlight of that game, there's two highlights that came to me. It's obviously Werner scoring, getting his first goal, which is great for everybody involved, but also seeing that shot of Mourinho walking down the tunnel and the cameraman just kind of stuck on this like empty spot and we're all just wondering what's going on, and then hearing the reveal of why he's going down, is I couldn't stop laughing in the middle.
I don't know if you watched the Tottenham against Newcastle game on Saturday, but when the penalty was given for Newcastle, which was dodgy, but it was still given, and when it was scored, I don't know if you saw it, but Jose Mourinho just turns and he just walks straight into the dressing room. He just leaves the game. So when I saw that today and I didn't know what was going on at first, I'm like, this guy's going to do this every game. It's fantastic.
Oh, I mean, that's a great exit, though. Just turn without saying anything and just leave. That's perfect. Yeah. It's such a him thing.
Yeah, I want to live in a world where, you know, it's like Where's Waldo? Everybody just tries to figure out when Mourinho left. I want to be able to watch a game and then they pan to the Tottenham bench and he's just not there anymore because he's just gone.
That would be great. Like the camera swung over, it's just an empty spot. You're just swinging around looking for him and he centers on Lampard, who just kind of shrugs. That would be perfect. I need that in the new documentary.
Yeah, All or Nothing 2. More Nothing 2.
All right. Well, that's enough about Tottenham. Hey, so if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. That way you can get updates whenever we have a lovely little rant on any Chelsea games that are coming up or have already happened. If you want to get in touch with us, if you have any comments, concerns, angry emails that you want to send us, any inaccuracies that we have, anything you want to do, we're all open ears. We'll read everything out straight on the podcast, uncensored. So whatever you want to throw at us, you can email us at academyofblues@gmail.com. And we also have an Instagram. You can get in touch with us at academyofblues. Got to get to the games, and we've had three this week.
We are sponsored by three.
Yeah, I mean, it just keeps coming back, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it really does. But we're briefly going to talk about the Barnsley game, and then we'll move on to West Brom, and then we'll talk about Tottenham in probably the most detail. But to keep it brief on Barnsley, just give me your immediate thoughts. Any pros and cons on that game, if you had any cons?
I think I mentioned in either our last podcast or the one before, I talked about how Hudson-Odoi is going to find it hard to find minutes this season. And right now, it's just a golden opportunity for him in many ways. One, if he does want to go out to a Premier League club, I'm sure there are plenty of Premier League clubs that want to take him because he is a very talented player and they'd be willing to give him minutes. So he has that option. But also because Pulisic and Hakim Ziyech or Ziyech aren't playing right now and they're injured, this is the time for him to make the most of every single minute that he gets. And in that Barnsley game, I was pretty disappointed that he didn't really make the most of what he could have, or he didn't make the most of the opportunity that he was given because he played all 90 minutes. We scored 6, but I don't believe he assisted any of them. And in fact, within the opening 25 seconds or so, Kai Havertz had put him through for a one-on-one and he just shot it straight at the keeper. So that was kind of disappointing. Other than that, I thought that it was really, really just easy and fun game to watch because Havertz scored a hat-trick. And I mean, the first one was probably my favorite one because of just the dummy from Tammy Abraham, the link up and the understanding that they have. That's awesome to see. And you could just see him growing more and more into the game. And actually, it kind of translated into the West Brom game, the confidence that he carried. So that was awesome to see. And then Ben Chilwell coming in and getting an assist. Thiago Silva playing 60 minutes. That was all good to watch. I think I said it last week that the Barnsley game probably came at the perfect time for us because we needed a game to kind of put the Liverpool one behind us against a fairly easy opposition or a very easy opposition. And yeah, so it proved that it was very easy and it was good for us.
Yeah, I mean, there's not too much to say about that game. I mean, you know, Havertz got a hat trick. That was great. Tammy was on it. I mean, I think I was probably telling you this off the podcast because the game hadn't happened when we recorded the last one. But I feel like Tammy, he's just like, as opposed to like the end of last season where he kind of felt like he was coasting on the success that he had at the earlier beginning. He had that hat trick against the Wolves, which I loved. And he had, you know, just a run of games where he was scoring like every other game. And it seemed like at the end of last season, it kind of tailed off with, and Giroud came in and kind of saved that season for us in those last few games. And to me, it felt like Tammy, it seemed like he had lost that drive that he was pushing him. Like he just kind of felt comfortable in the squad and he was going to kind of stay at that level. But that Barnsley game really changed my opinion of the direction that he's been going. And it feels like he's still pushing for that place. He's not going to let some foreign striker come in and take his job. You know, he's going to fight for his place. And he did a fantastic job doing it. I do agree with you about Hudson-Odoi. The thing is, and this is going to transition us into the West Brom game a bit, is that he does bring that other element. Like, it's hard to make a decision on him because he's so hot and cold. You know, he'll have games like that one against Barnsley, which should have been, you know, he should have had at least an assist on the board, should have had maybe a goal to his name right at the opening. But when he comes in the West Brom game, he totally changes it. And it's hard to make a decision on him because he proves that he can have these, like, flashes of brilliance. And then other games, he just goes invisible for the entire time.
Last season, when he played, especially in the early part of the season, I remember him, he came on, I think it was against Brighton and Hove Albion, and we were 1-0 up, and he just completely changed the game from the moment he was introduced as a sub. He was running at defenders, and he was taking people on, taking shots, and he ended up getting the assist for the goal that sealed the game, which was scored by Willian. And then the following week, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he was brought on again against Lille in the Champions League game. And in that one, he also assisted Willian as well. And so he has these moments of brilliance where he comes on and changes the game from a substitute's point of view. But I've never seen it from the start of a game. Even when he was coming into the team under Maurizio Sarri, I never really remembered him having that fear factor that he would bring to the game, where other players are kind of fearful of him, the same way that, you know, they would be of Eden Hazard, and now I think they would be of Christian Pulisic. So I think that the Barnsley game was definitely an opportunity missed there. But then, I mean, if we're going to transition to the West Brom game, he does just incredible things in that game. I mean, that 1-2 with Havertz and finish was just, I mean, if Eden Hazard does that, we're talking about it, you know, for weeks. And he had done that, and we did talk about it for weeks.
Getting away from Hazard, which I hate to do, but that first half was awful. I mean, if I wasn't running a podcast, I would have been tempted to turn it off after that first half because it just hurts my soul to see Chelsea lose so badly. And I mean, within 4 minutes, Callum Robson scores 1-0. After 25 minutes, scores another one to make it 2-0. And then 2 minutes later, 3-0 to West Brom, a team that had not won a single game so far in the season, a team that had conceded 5-3, I believe, in their first two games, who just came up from the Championship. We thought we got rid of our Bournemouth, but apparently we didn't. They're just West Brom now. And possibly one of the worst fullback performances I've seen from Marcus Alonso in that first half, because he didn't get a chance after that half to make it any worse, I suppose. But it really was a game of two halves, so I'm going to treat it as two different games. What do you think, if you could single everything down, every like problem that Chelsea has at the moment, into like one, is there any one thing you can say that Chelsea needs to fix, at least first, at the moment? It's like, what's the most pressing thing you would say that we need to fix?
The easy answer is, well, we've got to eliminate individual mistakes because those are what's costing us all these points and all these goals. But you have to ask, why does that happen? Because, I mean, this might be a bad week to say it, but you don't really see Liverpool players doing that. We did see Andy Robertson do it yesterday. But it's just, it doesn't happen in the same frequency that it does with Chelsea players. I think it is a system issue. We know that West Bromwich Albion is not going to come and dominate the game when it comes to possession and chances created against Chelsea and win in that way. The only way they'll be able to win is if they park the bus and try to hit us on the counter and on the break. So why Marcus Alonso decides to play the ball back into where the danger is from that header that led up to the first goal, why he decides to do that as opposed to just either play it back forward to where it came from or even just play it out for a throw-in. Because if he plays it out for a throw-in, it gives us a few seconds for our entire team to kind of come back on defense and reorganize. And West Brom would have it a lot harder for them to, it'd be a lot harder for West Brom to score on us in that way. But the fact that Marcus Alonso wasn't thinking in that way, that's what's frustrating. I think our players might be a little bit too bold and adventurous because only a player that was absolutely sure that he's going to make that pass with a header does that. A player who's unsure or a player who's even in a little bit of pressure doesn't do that. And so I think were probably guilty of being a little bit too adventurous, and you saw it the week before with Kepa essentially passing it right to Mane. So I would say that's one thing. The second thing is people just switch off. I mean, Alonso, he made the mistake for the first one. He was also at fault for the third one because Bartley is completely unmarked in the far post because he completely loses Marcus Alonso. You have to ask, why is Alonso just thinking that the ball is cleared when I think Alonso probably thinks, oh, it's not coming to the far post, so we're just going to clear it. I'll be fine. But clearly, that's not what happened. And so I think that the coaching staff is probably to blame for a certain portion of that. But even as much preparation as you do, there is nothing that you can do to prepare your players from like lapses of concentration and like those individual mistakes. The Thiago Silva one, that was just a freak accident. That can happen to anybody. It happened to Van Dijk the other day. And my guess is he was trying to control the ball and he saw Callum Robinson probably just from the side of his eye and briefly panicked. And as soon as he panicked, it was already all too late.
Yeah, I mean, it is a lot of individual errors. I will agree with you there. And definitely that Thiago Silva one was that one we could just chalk up the most individual error. That's not something you won't ever see a player do on like a regular basis. But most of the other ones, I'm going to make the devil's advocate argument that it is down to, for the most part, just defensive organization. Like when you see players doing something over and over and over again, you think, why are they doing that? It's probably because the manager told them to do things that way. And we know that Frank likes playing in this bold, adventurous way that makes for really exciting, you know, attacking interplay for like high pressing, win the ball back fast, you know, high possession stats. And it's great to watch when it's working. But as soon, it feels like every time we get hit with a counter, anytime a team, any player seems to run at our defense, it feels like there's a goal coming every single time. And that's not the fun part to watch. But when you see stuff like Marcus Alonso heading it back into danger, just being absolutely sure that someone will get to it, it might be something that Frank Lampard has tried to drill into his players. You know, like keep the ball in, keep it moving, keep the game going, don't let it get stopped by all these little breaks. Try and keep the ball in as much as possible, which is possible. And for that third goal, yes, he's unmarked at the back, but it's also because every other defender has moved up and Reece James has stayed back. And it seems like there's this conflict of, okay, well, there's two ways you can play that when a ball is getting crossed in. You can try to play that offside trap and try to move every player up, or you stay back and try to defend it. And it seems like every time we are in that sort of situation, some players move up and some players stay back. And it seems like there's never a consistent strategy there, which leaves for lots of unmarked players. Every single time there's goals we get from like crosses, it seems like there's always unmarked players inside that box. And it doesn't seem like anything that's been addressed at all, because we keep seeing it week after week after week. And, you know, every week we can come to the podcast and say, this player should have been doing this player should have been doing that. But I feel like at some point we're going to have to say, okay, well, what is Frank actually telling them to do? Like, what is our strategy for this? Because it feels like there isn't a strategy for that. It's just clear the ball. And then once we get into like the middle third, that's when the strategy becomes clear. At least to me, that's what it feels like.
Yeah. And so I don't know if you read this Athletic article earlier in the summer. A new member has been added to the coaching staff. To Lampard's coaching staff. His name is Anthony Barry, if I'm not mistaken. And he comes from Wigan Athletic, and he is one of the people that did his coaching badges with Frank Lampard. And just across England, he's one of the like most highly rated up-and-coming coaches. And if I'm right, I think he is there to sort of deal with a lot of the defensive issues that we've had. But one point that I do want to make is that just as it's going to take time for our forward line to gel and to come together and play like a team, and be cohesive, the same thing will be said about our backline too. And in that game against West Bromwich Albion, I do think that Frank Lampard got a couple of things wrong as far as just picking his starting 11 go. I don't think Marcus Alonso should have started at all. I think Dave should have started at left back with Reece James on the right, especially if Reece James is being instructed to just push far up the right as much as he was. Then what you do is you have a more conservative left back so that there's at least three back there at all times. But as we know, Alonso loves to attack, Reece James loves to attack, and so we were caught back there. So I would say that our first half capitulation to West Bromwich Albion was probably a mixture of Frank Lampard picking the wrong personnel for his starting 11 and individual errors, because like those are just freakish things that happen that there's nothing that we can there's nothing we can do about it. These are just things that you don't get ready for, you don't prepare for. And then when you look at the three goals that we scored, you don't say that at all about any of them. None of the goals that we scored were mistakes from West Bromwich Albion players or defenders or anything like that. And so, right, there's something to look into there.
Yeah. Well, moving on to the second half, that was a great game. I love that 3-0 win over West Brom that we had. I want to ask you, what is your favorite goal? I'm going to assume is the Hudson-Odoi goal. Am I right?
Well, it's tough because the Hudson-Odoi goal was, I think, to me, the most impressive one because it just showed, like, it showed where we should be and where we're going to be. Slick moves, one touch finish, bottom corner, breaking down defenses that are just completely like basically two blocks of five in front of the keeper. That one was most impressive to me. But I think that Mason Mount goal was just, it was so Frank Lampard-esque that he gets it and from that position he shoots and the keeper doesn't even move. Just everything about it just kind of rolled back the years for me. So because of that, I would probably say that that's my favorite, but the most impressive one was the second one.
Yeah, I mean, technically, the second one is great, and it's just such a Lampard way, like Lampard the manager style way of making that goal. But Mason Mount is just such a Lampard the player. Just yeah. Get the ball, get in a little bit of space, and just get the hell out of it until it hits the net as hard as you can. I mean, how could you not love a goal like that? That's just such a classic. Like, you know, that's going to appear on like Premier League DVD. Do they do Blu-rays now? Apparently, well,
I would even say even the third goal that Tammy Abraham scores is, in some ways, it's a classic number nine goal. But so many of the goals that Frank Lampard scored were classic number nine goals. And so that in itself was also a Lampard-esque goal because he just times his run perfectly enough and he kind of anticipates that it's going to drop right there because he doesn't break his stride. He just kind of just guides it into the goal because it falls right in front of him. And so that was great timing and composure to be there by Tammy Abraham in the 93rd minute.
Yeah, I mean, that really saved us because if it wasn't for that, I'd be way more down on this podcast than I am right now. But if we do look at it, it's a point against West Brom. I don't want to it feels like an Arsenal thing to celebrate a point against West Brom. But what it does prove is that we do have a very solid mentality within the team. And I've definitely watched games in the past where if a team concedes the first goal, you know they're going to lose the game. Like, there's no point. Like, their mentality just collapses and they never are able to come back from that. And it's something I've said before about this team, especially after that Ajax game, which this one did remind me of a whole lot, is that even 3-0 down at the half, they were still able to fight back and never give up that mentality. And it's every time I see a player score a goal after we're down and they run, just grab the ball and don't celebrate and run back to the pitch to get back at it. That's what always gives me hope that these players aren't just, you know, playing for their own prowess, playing to see their own goal tally go up. They're playing for the team and playing to get a point and get a win, hopefully. And it's one of those games I think that should make them stronger in the future, because if we tried this hard and we still came out of it with a loss, I think it's not great for the confidence of those players, but coming out of it and still being able to scrap a point out of that sort of game is going to be great for them in the future. So we score 6 against Barnsley, we score 3 against West Brom, and against this Tottenham team, we have chance after chance after chance. We have an incredible amount of possession, at least in the first half, and we're not able to do anything with it. What do you think? What's going on with us?
It's tough because so Tottenham did not want the ball, right? In this specific game, they didn't want the ball. They set up in a 3-5-1-1 type of thing. I don't know. It's a very weird formation. All I know is they had 3 across the back, and then 5 across midfield. And when they were defending, they were back 5. I would say that they didn't want the ball at all, which is why we had 75% possession in the first half. And I think Jose Mourinho was probably happy that it was 1-0 at halftime. And because he knew that as the longer the game went on, the more of an opportunity they had for something to happen, an upset. He had Harry Kane and Lucas Moura on the bench that he could bring on. One of the positives that we should take from this game against Tottenham is that Timo Werner got his first Chelsea goal. And what a goal it was. He knows exactly where to be because he pulls back as the cross is coming in. He trusts that Olivier Giroud is going to be making the near post run. So he gets to kind of to play the edge of the area. And when the ball comes to him, I could have sworn, I was like, there's no way this ball is going to go through because there were 3 Tottenham players closing him down. But somehow he finds a tiny little opening and it was just a perfect shot. It was just arrowed into the corner. To answer your question as to what went wrong in this game, it's hard to say. It's just that Tottenham played us in the sense that they played to the strengths that they had. They were very defensive. And they probably counted on us not having a perfect game, because in the times that we've beaten Tottenham under Jose Mourinho, we have had perfect games. Almost with every single decent opportunity that we had, we scored, and then we were good defensively against them. So it's really disappointing that they counted on us not being at our best, and it kind of came to pass. So I think that was more of it more than anything else, really.
I mean, that first half, though we had so much possession, and though it seemed like we kept, you know, moving forward, and it seemed like they were just content to sit back, that still made me nervous, because it's still a Mourinho team, and it's still a team that, like, even though we kept going forward, I don't think we had any shots on target until Timo shot. We had barely any shots in the game. It seemed like Giroud was struggling just to be involved. It seemed like he was like super isolated up front. Hudson-Odoi kept running into just trouble, kept losing the ball. Timo Werner had like no outlet, nobody to like play off of whenever he got the ball. And Mason Mount just doesn't really work well in a more aggressive, like progressed role where he has to be more creative. Frank's tried playing him as a winger. He's tried playing him in that like kind of sort of number 10 role in that 4-2-3-1. And Mount seems to really flourish best. Number one, when he's in that, like, you know, a little bit farther back in that midfield where he can do more pressing and winning the ball back and then spraying it forward to the more creative players. And number two, when he doesn't look like he's just exhausted, because I think he's played 100% of all the minutes available to him throughout the season, and it shows. It shows in just his general like play. He's a lot more sloppy now than he was at the beginning of the season. It shows in that 2v1 that we did have with him and Werner, where his pass just goes straight to, I forget the Tottenham player, but it goes straight to a Tottenham player.
It was Eric. He had just come back from the bathroom.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Came back just in time. Mason Mount probably just didn't realize that he was back. But it just seemed like no player was working together in the role that they preferred, or at least with the players that they knew how to work with. And Tottenham knew that that's how it would be playing. And they just had to sit back, wait for us to mess something up, because Chelsea has done that this season, have made one error throughout the game. And it felt like a very Jose versus Lampard mentality. It was a Jose, like, sit back, you know, be cautious, be careful, wait for that opportunity, whereas Lampard's sort of possession-based, you know, if we have possession, they can't score, sort of ideas. And at this point, that practicality won over Lampard's more modern approach to the game.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, because I think the Carabao Cup and the FA Cup are our only realistic opportunities for silverware this season. And now only the FA Cup is left. And, you know, a cup competition is your only one bad game away from not from being kicked out of the competition. I mean, Tottenham is not going to go on to win the Carabao Cup. So they're just going to go into the next round. They're probably going to get out of it then and there, especially with Liverpool, Man City, United, Arsenal all still in there. And the fixture list that they have, they won't be able to do it. But it would have been better for us to be one of the teams going up against those teams and using that to give minutes to some of our players. And if we kept doing well, it would have been a real opportunity to just instill a lot of confidence into our players as early as, you know, February with a trophy and a medal in their hands. So that's probably the biggest bummer of it all, besides the fact that it was Tottenham that we failed to beat. But I wanted to ask you, what did you think of Edouard Mendy?
So I remember every time they would mention Mendy, it seemed like they would cut to Kepa on the bench looking just miserable the entire match. For me, I thought he had a pretty good showing. His penalties weren't great, but we didn't sign him for his penalty saving. But other than that, he had a shot he saved with his foot, and he had a shot he saved from Raylan. That was pretty good. And both of those instances were instances where I could say, okay, an experienced, high-quality keeper can or should be making those saves, but those are both shots that I could definitely see Kepa letting in. And it just gives so much more of a sense of security to have somebody who provides at least a standard level of keeping and shot stopping that should be available to us. Yeah. And it seems like he's just a really good stopgap for finding our next, you know, high-level keeper at the moment.
You don't think he could be the one?
I haven't seen too much of him, but, you know, keepers can also play for a lot longer than other players, and I've been kind of counting him out because he's not, you know, I've been kind of like grown accustomed to the 21, 22 year old players that we've had coming in, and he's not at that level. He's been around for a little while longer. I believe he's 28. Yeah, but keepers could play. I mean, Caballero's 39 and he's still going at it. I mean, if Petr Cech sees it in him, I mean, I'm not gonna argue against him, but his collecting crosses, he seemed a lot better than Kepa was. He seemed a lot more confident in that. There was a few that he seemed a little bit less confident on, but it was his first game. So that will certainly get better with time, especially as he grows better with communicating with the defenders in front of him. I thought it was a pretty good game for him overall. How about you?
I thought it was a good game for him too. I thought it was interesting that he went the wrong way on every single penalty. That was odd to me. But again, if you come down to penalties, and especially playing against a Tottenham team, where most of the penalty takers weren't really starters. Who knows, right? But I would say I was very pleased. The shot that he saved from Reguilon, I was 100% sure that was going to go in, because we've seen our left back / left wing back, Marcus Alonso, bury those just time and time and time and time again, where he kind of arrives late, it rolls out to him, and he just puts his foot through it perfectly. And so I was like, this guy's highly rated. Surely it's going to go in. And when he saved it, I was, in the best way possible, I was shocked. As far as his handling goes, I completely agree. It was good. He was coming out for almost every single cross that went in. He was trying to get to it. There was one that he kind of spilled. But even though he spilled it, one, it didn't lead to a goal, which is great. But two, you just see his intent and how he wants to completely dominate his box, which we've needed for so long since that snake Thibaut Courtois left.
I will give Courtois that. Whenever Courtois was in goal, I never felt worried about crosses coming in because of his like long giraffe neck and his like arms that would reach out and grab every single thing that came in. It felt like, and going from that to Kepa was such a stark difference.
Yeah. Well, Thibaut Courtois had the head of a snake, the arms of an orangutan, and the neck of a giraffe. And so, yeah, we felt safe with him in the back.
It makes him a good keeper, though.
Yeah, yeah. But then we got stabbed in the back, so there you have it. I think I'd take Kepa any day of the week.
I feel like your villains in like some sort of like TV show starring you would be Mourinho with Courtois as a henchman.
And Diego Costa would be the anti-hero that we would convince to bring to the good side.
Oh, that would be a great show. I just want to see like an animated Chelsea TV show. So moving on to the second aspect of this game that I was super excited to see is, how did you feel about Reguilon versus Chilwell in this match? I mean, they were on opposite sides, but they were both players that were being considered by the Chelsea board to sign, and we ended up going with Frank's choice of Chilwell, a little bit more expensive option. But how'd you feel about them in this game?
I would say two things. One, Reguilón looked better, but Reguilón played a system that suited him better than Chilwell did today. Chilwell needs to play with someone like Christian Pulisic ahead of him and not so much Timo Werner, or Chilwell needs to play with Conte in the team. Because if Conte's in the team, he can bomb down the field and be sure that he's covered with somebody playing in defensive midfield. He did not have much of that today. And because of how much of a, like how much of two blocks Tottenham had, it was hard to see any of the attacking output from Ben Chilwell. But I thought defensively, he was decent. He was good. With Reguilón, what Tottenham did really, really well, this was impressive to me, was they would get somebody, one of their strikers or midfielders or wingers, whatever they were, because their formation was hard to identify. But like, for example, Lamela or Steven Bergwijn, they would start out wide and they would come into where a striker or a number nine would be, and Aspi would get sucked in. And so then Sergio Reguilón would just bomb down the left side of the field and they would ping long balls to him. And that's how they ended up scoring. Aspi gets sucked in, Reguilón crosses it in because he had so much space and time to bring the ball down. So they did that really, really well. So I think that Reguilón probably had a better game than Chilwell did. But overall, I think I still side with Chilwell. I know most people aren't convinced by him, but he's a 23-year-old left back who's, I think, is only going to get better. And he's already proven in the Premier League. I remember last season when Leicester and Liverpool were playing, a lot of the pundits and a lot of analysts were saying that this was a game of the two best fullbacks in the Premier League against the two second best fullbacks in the Premier League, as it was Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold on one side and Ricardo Pereira and Ben Chilwell on the other side. And so the fact that he's proven and experienced in the Premier League and he knows the demands, and it won't really take that much time for him to settle in the same way that it did maybe with Kai Havertz or it might with Hakim Ziyech, I still think that we got a good deal for him. With Reguilón, we will see him struggle a lot against teams that are playing a 3-4-3 when he's playing in a 4-2-3-1, which is Mourinho's favorite formation. So I'm still happy that we got Ben Chilwell, and I'm excited to see more and more of Ben Chilwell. And I actually don't think that he's still fully fit yet, because after 60 minutes, he just seemed completely gassed out, and he definitely needed to be taken off. So
he's still coming back from injury, still getting used to the pace of the game. So we will see at the end of the season where we can make more clear judgments on which of the two left backs was a better signing at the moment.
Yes.
Reguilón did have that slide that I really liked for our first goal, where Aspi receives the ball and Reguilón comes flying in. And it just, as soon as he kept flying in, I was thinking, just take it to the side, Aspi, just let him keep going. And he did. And he was like 10 yards off at the end, where Aspi was able to put in a cross with a bunch of time, which led to that first goal. But other than that, I think he had a fantastic game, which I hate to say about a Tottenham player.
Yeah, he had a terrible game.
Let me ask you this, though. So Lampard at times has played like Timo Werner, for those of you who don't know, as that lone striker in the middle in a front three. And recently he's been playing him kind of on the left, kind of playing off either Tammy or playing off Giroud as the main striker with him on the left side. But I don't think he's been playing as well on that side. He hasn't made an impact in many of the games where he started on that side. And it seems like he struggles to find space and connect with them. What do you think is his best role at the moment? Or what do you think? How do you think we should be using Timo Werner right now?
Timo Werner looked extremely bright in the two games where he started as a center forward. Against Brighton and Liverpool, because those two teams were teams that weren't sitting back to defend, but they were pushing up, which left a lot of room behind them and a lot of room for him to run around. The problem that you run into with Timo Werner playing as a winger against teams that are completely pegged back, Tottenham were basically playing 10 yards outside the penalty box the whole game. The problem you run into there, then he does actually become a winger as opposed to an inverted winger that comes into the middle, even though that's exactly what he did for his goal. He didn't look as bright in this game as he did against, say, Brighton and Hove Albion or Liverpool. I would say that Lampard has to be careful about how he uses him out on the left. And if he puts him out on the left against teams that are going to come after us and leave a lot of room behind them to run into, then fantastic. But if it's against teams that are going to sit back, he does need to be playing up top as our number nine. And even with RB Leipzig, he played in one of three different formations. He played as a sole striker. He played in sort of like a 3-5-2. He was one of the two where he was running off another striker. Or he played in a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3. But when he played in a 4-3-3, it was against teams that had a lot of high press. And so he would start out wide and it would either be a ball over the top or a through ball that puts him through. And he would use that to just run in behind them. And typically he's deadly when he runs in behind defenders like that. But the truth is that he's played four games for Chelsea now, right? Yeah, he's played four games for Chelsea now. And not once has he actually been put through in behind a back line properly. So I think he had one against Liverpool, but he didn't have a good touch. But with the exception of that, he really hasn't been through that. So I think that he needs to play as a number nine in games that are where teams are going to sit back and defend against us. And he should play as a winger when there's a lot of room for him to run behind. But then again, once Christian Pulisic becomes available, there's no way that Werner's going to play out on the left, because having Christian Pulisic in the starting 11 and coming in off that left wing is so much more valuable than having Tammy or Giroud up top and having Werner run off of them. Because then when you have Pulisic, Havertz, and Timo Werner, and hopefully Hakim Ziyech sniffing around the box, then if a team has four defenders or even five defenders, then they have to seriously be worried about and think about marking four of our players. Whereas now, they don't have to. Like, the fact that Tottenham had three players chasing down Timo Werner when he scored, that shouldn't be happening if you have a front line or an attacking four that are completely revered and feared by the league. So,
no offense meant to the other players on the team, but Mason Mount and Tammy Abraham, as good as they can be when they're scoring goals, they're not a consistent goal threat every single time. You're not scared of them as a defender running towards you, or Hudson-Odoi. And that's just not the same with Pulisic, with Havertz now, after that showing at Barnsley, and after, like, it seems like every game he seems to be growing more and more into this role, into the team. And when Ziyech comes back, I feel like that's going to be a whole other, it's going to be all these different players with different skill sets. And as long as they can understand each other and work together, that feels like four hazards you're going to have to be covering at the same time, which will be terrifying, hopefully, for other teams. Now on to the very last thing that happened, something I just watched a few hours ago, so I'm still a little bit sore about it. The penalties in that Tottenham game. I feel like it used to be that whenever Chelsea went into a game where penalties were an option, I felt very, very confident going into a penalty shootout. We've always had great penalty takers. Usually we've had keepers that are more than capable of saving them. But this was not a great penalty shootout for us. I mean, we had four solid, confident goals and one not so confident. And I don't feel like we could really blame Mason Mount for that. But I don't know. How did you feel about this penalty shootout?
It was a weird penalty shootout to watch, because one, it looked like every single player wanted to go to their left and the keeper's right, and the keepers were going in the opposite direction all the time. I think the only exception were Harry Kane and Jorginho that went to their right, and everybody else went to their left. Ten players went to their left, and the keepers, eight times, went to the right. At the end of the day, it was frustrating, but again, I don't know if there's much to say there. I think every single one of our penalties was actually a really good penalty, including the Mason Mount one, because it's so reminiscent of the John Terry one. I know it went to the other side, but the way it clips off the bar and goes out, it was almost the same thing. And he knew exactly what he wanted to do, which is put it off to the side netting as hard as he can, and it just didn't come off. So disappointing, but end of the world? I don't think so.
Let me ask you. I don't like that. It seems like the penalty shootouts we have had, I feel like Lampard keeps putting in the youth players to take the fifth one. We had Tammy miss one. We had Mount miss one. And I feel like it's just a lot of pressure for them to be coming into this penalty shootout. They don't really take penalties that much. It's usually Jorginho takes the penalties. But it's a lot of pressure. And when they miss it, that's when a lot of the fan base turns on them. I am not one of those who's going to slag a player off for, you know, missing a penalty. But, you know, Mason Mount has already had a good amount of hate from fans who think that Frank plays him too much, and this is only going to add fuel to that fire.
Yeah, one of the things that you definitely do want to do with penalties is you want to get your most experienced players to go in the earlier part of the shootout, because that builds confidence as you go into the latter part of it, into the more decisive part of it. But unfortunately, it's hard because if Lampard puts the kids up in the front and then puts Jorginho as the fifth penalty taker, maybe the result is different, but who's to know that, right? Because then the argument could be that the kids would be a little bit more nervous going on in the early part because nobody has scored yet and they have to be the first one to score and get the team off the mark. And I, quite frankly, I believe the moment we lost that penalty shootout was in the coin toss. When Tottenham won the coin toss and they picked to go first, because going first is the best thing you can do in a penalty shootout, because you get to get it out of the way and put the pressure on them. And if you end up missing it, there's still a very, very small chance that you get bailed out by the other team missing it. So that definitely didn't go in our favor. And it was the exact same thing against Liverpool in the UEFA Cup or whatever it's called too. So I see the argument to both sides. And if it were me, I probably would have not brought on Tammy Abraham. I would have brought on Kai Havertz when there was about 15 minutes left of the game. I would have just taken Giroud off, brought in Havertz, have him play there. Maybe he wins us the game. Maybe he doesn't. And if he doesn't, he's a great penalty taker as well. And then I would have put him as the fourth or fifth and relieved one of the other kids.
I used to like those. I feel like they used to do, at least I've seen it a few times. I don't know if they've ever done it in the Premier League or the Cups, but I guess they wouldn't do it in the Premier League. It would just be in the Cups. But that ABBA format where it's like one team goes, then the other team goes twice, then it goes back. I feel like that evens the odds out a lot more because, you know, at this point, when you win the toy toss, you're like 70-30 to win the penalty shootout. since you're always putting the other two on the back foot. But I'm not the FA. We don't make the rules. I would change so many rules.
Handballs against Man United, no matter what happens.
Yeah.
Everything's a handball against Man United.
Bruno Fernandes is not allowed to take penalties. That's written in the laws. Bruno Fernandes, no penalties for you. Penalty goals do not count towards a golden boot would be one of them, because the fact that a player can get like 10 penalties and just be the designated
taker, that's ridiculous to me. It's a disservice to other strikers who don't take penalties and you're still in the race for golden boots.
Exactly. I mean, Jorginho, if we got more penalties, he could be in the race for golden boot and he'd never scores from open play. So we're coming to the end of our show now, but before we end it, I want to get your thoughts on the upcoming game against Crystal Palace that's going to be coming up. Hopefully we wear our third kits so we all look exactly the same, no one can tell us apart.
That's what I'm looking forward to the most, is two teams wearing an absolutely ridiculously ugly kit and running around. Let's see, this is going to be our first, this isn't our first home game of the season, but this is our first home game of the season that I think we should be favorites to win, even though Crystal Palace have gotten off to a good start in the league. I think what I want to see in this game is a little bit more of our forward line clicking. And then beyond that, I want to see just our back line get a clean sheet, because we need it. Because every time we don't keep a clean sheet, no matter how the goals go in, there are questions raised about our defensive structure and back line and all that stuff. So I just want one game before we go into the international break where we don't have to talk about how bad or how shaky our defense looked. And this weekend, I assume the lineup is going to be Mendy, Reece James, Zuma, and or Christensen with Thiago Silva and Chilwell. And then Kante Kovacic in the middle, Havertz right in front of them, Mount on the left, hopefully Hudson-Odoi on the right, and Werner out top. That's what I would guess it's going to be, but you never know. So with that lineup, I think there's a lot of fluid movement up top. There's a decent amount of like ball playing and midfielders that can help us keep possession. And then I think it's a solid back line if you have Chilwell instead of Alonso.
Sounds good. We have won the last five games we played against Crystal Palace. Ooh. I hate to say it, because now I'm going to ruin it. I'm knocking on wood right now. They did just beat United 3-1, so they are something to look out for this season. But no, I feel like after harsh games, we usually come back pretty strong. So I'm giving this I'm going to say we're going to win this 3-1. That's my score prediction for this one. How about you?
3-0.
3-0. Wow.
3-0. I think a goal from Werner, a goal from Havertz, and one from, I don't know, maybe Reece James, I'd say.
That's pretty bold. I'm going to say a Mendy hat trick and then a Mendy own goal. That's going to be my official prediction for this. So that's been it for our podcast. As you all know, we are experts at ending these podcasts. So
that's right. We're almost as good as Chelsea closing out games.
Almost. Not quite. We're not quite at that level yet. We will be with you again next week with a review of the Crystal Palace game and a preview of the Southampton game. And we probably won't talk about the international break at all, because we don't care about that. It doesn't matter. With that, I have been Daniel.
And I have been Maddie.
And we'll see you next week.